There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Two Jacksonville State University students brought home a national title for cornhole.
Say what? It's Midday Mobile, 1207, FM Talk 106.5. What is that? It's
Two Jacksonville State University students brought home a national title for cornhole. Yes, the game many casually play at tailgating earned them the title as the American Cornhole League National College Doubles Champions.
Okay, so I just want to say, there's a lot. Listen, we're going to talk about what's going on in Washington right now. So much happening. Also in Montgomery. We'll get into that. 6.5 stories today. All that good stuff coming up. But I just have to say, we're going to talk about a cool event going on at Fairhope Brewing Company here this weekend. We'll do that in just a second. But I'm just going to say, going to set the stage, and we'll circle back on this. You know, I went to college at the wrong time. You've heard me lament before. They have the, it's not just the SEC, it's outside. It's NCAA college fishing. Fishing, bass fishing, tour. You could be a college athlete here and fish for your university. And, you know, we now have it at the high school level, too, in Fairhope and a couple other schools. I think it's awesome. And then this story pops up that cornhole, like, yes, like that, like throwing the bag, the beanbag thing, the little beanbag thing in there through the hole, like what you normally do if, well, you know, like you're tailgating or cooking out in the backyard or hanging around the camp house or something like that, that is now at a collegiate level. Story from ABC 3340, two Jacksonville State University students brought home the national title for cornhole. They are they competed in the American Cornhole League National College Doubles Champions. They've got shirts, y'all, for Jacksonville State. They've got state logoed shirts for that for their school. They are college athletes, air quotes here, you can't see, it's radio, but they get to go around and represent their school and play cornhole. Just want to point out that I went, if I could only have been born, you know, usually people say I was born too late, I should have been born 20 years earlier. In this case, I probably should have been born 20 years later, or maybe 40 years later might have been better, but there it is. So if you're handy at playing cornhole, you teach the kids, and maybe there'll be scholarships available down the road. That might be something that we can work on. You know what? We could ask my buddy Brian Kane if he thinks it, because I know he coaches some youth athletics out there. What do you think? We start coaching up the cornhole teams?
You know, I like the idea a lot. My kids play here at the brewery, and I was going to let you know that I was part of the 2017 Eastern Shore Chamber of Commerce cornhole champion team.
Whoa! I'm talking
yes,
to
some. Yes, I'm also a champion. That's correct.
Wow! So your reaction from a champion like you to the reaction of these two Jacksonville State, North Alabama boys that went and brought all the college doubles cornhole. It's got to be pretty competitive. Or how's the field look?
You know, the field wasn't too tough for us. We understood the rules, and that was a little step above most of the other teams, but. We had fun playing, and, you know, I'd love to meet these guys one day, pass along all my knowledge from years of cornhole playing. I guess they probably don't need it.
No, well, they can always get better. I mean, they're going to constantly strive to get better at their game of throwing a beanbag through a hole. And
and
the fact that you can do it at a collegiate level now, I mean, just, you know, for those of us, we went to big schools, and so therefore there wasn't really a chance, unless you were some athletic phenom, to get on a team, unless it was a rec league team. If there had been bass fishing and cornhole at the University of Alabama, I could have been a collegiate athlete, man.
problem is I don't think they let you drink beer when you're in the college competition.
That's a problem. That is problematic.
So you might not be as good at fishing or at cornhole if you don't have a beer in your hand.
That's true. I have to work on that. Hey, speaking of having a beer in my hand, another great party and the 6th anniversary party at Fairhope Brewing Company. This is pretty awesome. It's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Explain this to me.
Well, we every year we try and theme our parties after a movie. We've done Rocky IV. We've done Back to the Future 2. We did Empire Strikes Back. We got to 6, and you kind of run out of options on quality movies. And so in our brainstorming session, all of a sudden somebody popped up with 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, and we're like, that's it. That gives us lots of movies to play with.
Yeah, and this is all surrounding a anniversary. It's your birthday party.
Exactly. But we like to have, you know, something where we're going to, you know, we named the beers. We were just going through our beer list earlier based on some of his beer or his movie names. We have the River Wit, or we have Mystic River, which is a rye IPA. So we go through and we try and be creative.
Y'all are always creative, and especially when it comes to birthday time. Okay, so when the party kicks off tomorrow, talk about what's happening, when we need to get there, how this all works.
Yeah, we're starting off at 2 o'clock. It is $5 to get in the door, but that also gets you a commemorative pint glass to take home. We will have 40 beers rotating throughout the day. So we'll have 15 beers inside all day long, and then 4 rotating taps outside with different beers on them. We do have a very large tent, so in case the weather is as predicted, which looks like right around the start time for us, it could be raining, but we've got all that covered. We've got music all day, 2 food trucks. It's been a great time every year. I don't think this one will be any different.
No, a lot of people are excited about it, too, and some specialty pours going on tomorrow. And if they want to come out, and because you're putting some pictures on your Facebook page, you're talking about the food trucks. I mean, bring an appetite, right? I mean, there's going to be plenty of food.
Right. We've got a Blues Burger food truck who they've been with us for quite a while now, doing events for us. And then Ten Ten's Rock and Roll truck, who pretty much is here every week for our trivia. So we've got a good relationship with those guys. They're both efficient. Which is really important. You know, you don't want to be waiting an hour for your food. So they move quickly. They've got a wide menu from, you know, you can get hamburgers to tacos to some Asian food, depending on what you're in the mood for tomorrow.
Well, you can pair it with, I mean, you got 40 beers to serve tomorrow. There's a lot of pairing going on there.
That's true. There certainly is, yes.
All right. Once again, this starts tomorrow. And if people want to get, is it $5 at the door? You get tickets ahead of time? How's that work?
Yeah, it's just $5 at the door. We're 914 Nichols Avenue on the south side of Fairhope, just past Thomas Hospital on the left. I'd say get here as soon as you can. Parking is always a little bit problematic with us, but everybody seems to find a spot somewhere. And yeah, so we're going to have plenty of room. We have some extra bathrooms this year, which was a bit of an issue. The men's line was a little long last year, so we're working on that. So we try to learn every year, improve upon it. So I think this one's going to be even better than last year.
All right. I will see you out there tomorrow. And will you be giving out any free tips? I mean, now that I know you're a champion of cornhole, I mean, can you just give a little knowledge, a little wisdom here to folks when we come out tomorrow?
You know, we actually have, oddly, a few boards here, if you can imagine. and if the weather, once the weather clears up, we can, we'll break them out, put them out by our deck. And, you know, as I walk by, I might give some quick analysis of folks and their form and the height of the throw and all the important things.
I'm looking forward to it. Brian Kane with Fairhope Brewing Company, thanks for checking in, and happy birthday. We'll see you out there tomorrow.
Hey, thanks so much, Sean.
All right, and who knew? A champion in his own right. I'm sorry, I put the story up. I know it doesn't sound like the biggest story ever, but to me, it's just another one of these collegiate sports, and I'm happy about it. There's ways for people that might not be able to make the, you know, football team, basketball team, baseball team, swimming, track, equestrian, whatever, might be something for them. Because a lot of those sports, right, you have to have committed your whole life to training for and all that. But cornhole might just be a natural. Yeah, 2 kids from Jacksonville State University got the National Collegiate Double Championship in cornhole. Maybe the governor, can we get Governor Ivey to do some kind of proclamation or edict form or something like that? It would be good stuff. All right, coming right back, Todd Stacey joins us next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1220 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Friday. I put the story up on Twitter. I'm not dogging these. Somebody said I'm not dogging them out. I'm jealous. Branson Oliver, Dustin Travis, Jacksonville State. I do like how narrowly defined. I'm not saying they're not good. I haven't played cornhole against them yet, but they are the American Cornhole League's National College Doubles Champions, which means there's a singles champion. There's a team. I don't know how it all works, but they're champions nonetheless, and they get to play for their college. I'm telling you, more options, and they have you do the fishing team. You could do that. I don't know. We're going to find out from Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Would that have been? Would any of those been good for you in college to have some kind of sport like that to play?
I was decent at cornhole, but I'm wondering, you know, who won the beer pong competition, you know, or flip cup, you know,
who
came out first in those? I'm telling you, I could have competed. I really could have competed.
It'd be like, mom and dad, I think I have a future. They're going to look at a scholarship here. Oh, and what, honey? Flip cup. Flip cup. I'm going to be playing some flip cup. Oh, man, so much to talk about. I'm glad to have you on today as we wind out this week. But stories this week, so many over at aldailynews.com. And people can get that information in their inbox when they go subscribe.
That's right. Aldailynews.com is the homepage. But right, you know, every morning I send out an email that goes right to your inbox with all the top stories of the day, news briefs from around the state and around the country, just kind of giving you a pretty good digestible bites about what's going on that day. So it's really easy. Just click the subscribe button right at the top, enter your name and email, and you'll be signed up for the Daily News Digest that comes out every morning.
All right. One of the stories this week at AL Daily News, and I was talking to folks about this yesterday and said, if this name sounds familiar, because, you know, we're at the other end, we're in the remote sections of the state of Alabama. Not everybody here in Mobile and Baldwin County knows Ed Henry as a kitchen table name for politics, but I reminded them of the impeachment proceedings against former Governor Bentley, and a person that was probably the most vocal in that and holding meetings, and that was Representative Ed Henry, and he pled guilty this week to what?
Well, he pled guilty to basically government property theft, but it was in connection with what was like a kind of like a pill mill case. He ran a bunch of health clinics up in North Alabama. He represents Hartselle in the legislature. That's up near Decatur. And so he has these health clinics, and he would push doctors to prescribe patients with the kind of medicine that his clinics provided, and that's obviously fraud. And so the doctor had already pled guilty in that case, and now he at first maintained his innocence, but now has pled guilty, and he'll be serving some time.
Really? So you do think he will see the inside of a jail or prison?
Well, I speak too soon. I'm not sure what the agreement is, but he has pled guilty, and that's what we do know.
Also, I think it's interesting, even though this was something he was doing as his other job, he's also a legislator. When you start talking about prescriptions and you start talking about state legislators, it makes me think of a few years earlier, right, and what had been discussed here that went into to the whole Hubbard discussion. Where you know, you had people using.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So Ed Henry, he kind of defined himself as this anti-corruption crusader. He led the charge against, you know, Robert Bentley. He led the impeachment charge. He went all around the state trying to gin up, you know, this impeachment stuff. And turns out, you know, all along that he had some skeletons in his closet as well. What's interesting about this is that he's not being convicted, or he's not pleading guilty to actual corruption related to his office. He didn't do anything at the state
level. Right, just his business.
That, you know, he didn't use his office for political gain. Right, it was his business. They essentially committed Medicaid fraud, and like I said, theft of government property is what he eventually pled guilty to. So, but it's the latest in, you know, a long string of embarrassing episodes for the state where public officials are, you know, caught up in corruption deals. I do think this is probably going to be the last one for a long time. There has been a sting going on that wrapped up several lawmakers. Mickey Hammond, who was up also in North Alabama, pleaded guilty. There's a plea agreement for a couple more in the works. But I think this is hopefully at least the last one we're going to see for a long time.
Well, we would always hope that for sure, but that we'll see as time moves on. And you're right. I'm not saying that Ed Henry was, this is not an ethics violation, but if I'm a prosecutor and I want to try to at least cast aspersions here, the fact that he was a state rep probably helped him in this fraud. I'm not saying it was because of, but I mean, you have a name brand there. You have some influence.
No question. No question. I mean, you never stop being that state representative, right? You never take that hat off completely. And so, yeah, that no question, that certainly adds to it. And I'm sure that he, you know, he didn't lose business because he was a state representative, put it that way. Now some of the others, the other corruption trial that is kind of, that was not related to this but is similar to this, was an actual state house corruption scheme where Mickey Hammond, you know, was trying to push legislation that would essentially have forced Blue Cross Blue Shield to cover payments for a company that he, a healthcare company that he owned. Now that's state house corruption.
Yeah,
when you're trying to pass legislation that benefits yourself, and so he, you know, he didn't have a prayer when he finally got caught, and he pleaded guilty last year. So that was definitely a state house corruption scheme. This one sounds a lot like it, but it did not involve legislation or anything like that.
I want to get into that for a second because, I mean, your insight into Montgomery is really good because for a long time I've talked to people that say, well, they're so corrupt in Montgomery, and they were looking at all these things going on. And I said, if you're looking for, I'm not saying it hadn't happened, but if you're looking for a lobbyist or interest that comes and brings the brown paper bag full of cash and hands it over to the House member or member of the Senate, that's not usually what we're looking at. It's a little more nuanced than that. Not doesn't make it any less unethical. It's just more nuanced, right? And it's things like you're talking about the Hammond case where you have a chance to write the law that would make your company the only one that would fit the definition of the law or something like that. It's those kind of things I see more of.
Oh, yeah. It's never, hey, so-and-so lobbyist, let's go break the law on Tuesday. You know, it's never very obvious. And I'll tell you, Sean, I mean, you know, 90% of these things, it involves people that don't set out intending to break the law. Nobody, you know, they don't set out to say, hey, I really want to get one over on the people or get one over on somebody and benefit myself. It's a slippery slope. You start out with the right intentions, and then, you know, one thing leads to another, and suddenly you are facing, you know, you're making a decision that, you know, can really cost you. I think you saw that with the Hubbard case. You saw that with Mickey Hammond and some of these others. It wasn't necessarily corruption, but you saw it with Bentley. I mean, he really compromised his office, not for political gain, not for, you know, financial gain, for what would the affection of a woman, you know? And so now, you know, maybe that's not quote unquote corruption, but man, he wasn't serving the people correctly. And so anytime you get down the slippery slope of, you know, well, am I serving my constituents or am I making decisions based on that can benefit me personally? That's the line. You can't cross it. And one thing is, we do need clearer ethical guidelines that spell out exactly what lawmakers can and cannot do in terms of, you know, business arrangements. That could stand to be a lot clearer because there's some gray area, but everybody knows right and wrong.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's some, the extreme cases are easy, but you're right, and we're not talking about Oliver Robinson, you know, we're not talking about those things where you're given, you know, given money into this account and then you go say certain things to your constituents. But these ones that are in the business side of it, because I can imagine just trying to put myself in somebody else's shoes, you could say, you know what, I would support that legislation. I would write something that way, even if I didn't have a business interest in it. I'm what I'm doing here is what I would do even if I didn't have a financial gain. So I'm being true to the people because this is how I would have voted anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that, you know, why would that be a problem? But look, if you've got a financial interest on a piece of legislation, you can't vote on it. That's pretty clear. It happens in Congress all the time. People have to be very careful about things that they vote on. Let's say it involves some kind of federal purchase of property and you own some. Man, do not even get close to that. Don't touch it. It's not worth it. And so what's interesting to me is that with the Ed Henry case and the Mickey Hammond case and some of these others, is that even after, you know, some very high profile cases, after the Bingo Wars, after Don Siegelman, you know, after the very lengthy Hubbard trial, you would have thought that, man, everybody is on their P's and Q's. Everybody is, you know, really paying attention to be very careful not to violate state laws. And yet, I mean, it was the majority leader, you know, who ran afoul of the law in a pretty obvious way, mind you. So, you know, hopefully we're over it for now. A lot of folks have retired and sought other jobs, and we've got a lot of new blood in the legislature. There is a sense of, hey, we've turned the page into a new day as far as the new governor and new lieutenant governor and all these things. So hopefully we can get beyond some of this mess.
And coming right back, more with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, the website. They'll take it to Washington, also take it to Birmingham, too, as the story has more information around the shooting at the Galleria. What was that, Thanksgiving night? And we're still waiting for more information on that. Some of that's out, and it's over at aldailynews.com. We'll get Todd to tell us more about that when we get back.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad you're here. Remember, online, fmtalk1065.com. One of the very popular click-throughs on the front page of fmtalk1065.com is the podcast page, where you can get 40 hours a week of live local programming that we do around here. We sure appreciate all those downloads. It has been quite an awesome thing. And when you're downloading, you can go to our website and just get it a la carte. But if you want it delivered to your smartphone, you can sign up to get our downloads through iTunes, or if you're an Android user like me, Stitcher, also on Spotify, TuneIn Radio. All these places our podcasts are there. But when you do grab that podcast of this show, or Bill Finch's show on the weekend, or maybe Sports Night with Dalton and Corey, or whatever show you're choosing, make sure to give it a 5 stars or thumbs up or whatever the ranking system is. We sure appreciate that if you'll do that. All right, so it is podcast friendly on all those platforms, and if you just want to get one to share with somebody or something like that, grab it from the front page of our website, fmtalk1065.com. Continue our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, and bring us up to date on, because I saw on your email this morning that I want everybody to get, I saw that you had update here, Galleria testimony, more information on this story that started Thanksgiving night. Right?
That's right. Everybody remembers the big story. Thanksgiving night, there was a shooting in the Galleria. That's the biggest mall in the state. A shooting that, you know, it wounded a couple of bystanders, but it actually killed. It resulted in the police shooting of E.J. Bradford. He's a black American. He's a former soldier. And it has sparked weeks of protests up there in Birmingham, you know, around the Galleria. It has sparked protests here in Montgomery. They've come to the Attorney General's house and other people within law enforcement here to basically protest, hey, you know, this black man was killed by police and they acted inappropriately. But we've not seen any of the video. We've not seen, you know, really any evidence of until now. So yesterday, the man who is being charged with attempted murder, his name is Aaron Brown. He came up for a hearing yesterday. There basically is a preliminary hearing before the grand jury gets it. And there was a lot revealed in this, information we've not known before. One, probably the most important, is that Bradford, who was shot, he was the one that was shot and killed by police. Bradford was apparently standing over the victim with a gun drawn moments before police shot him. That's what The state investigator testified from having seen the video, and that was backed up by eyewitnesses.
And, and that diverts a lot from the narrative coming out that that he was running away, he was some distance away, running with a crowd and all that. I mean, that's very contrary.
Absolutely. Well, from day one, the narrative kind of put forth by his family and by his attorney, or his family's attorneys, is that this is a good guy with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who was armed. He's a former soldier. He was doing the right thing and trying to respond to a situation that had gotten out of control. That does not, according to this testimony, that does not appear to be the case, or at least there are some major holes in it, because from the eyewitnesses who were there, who were friends with different, you know, groups of friends involved, he was part of this, you know, altercation that happened and maybe instigated it. He, as far as the shooting itself, in which he, you know, Bradford lost his life, there is video and there is testimony that now shows that he was standing over a victim, still alive, while with a gun drawn. Now, that does not add up to the portrayal of, you know, him responding and being the good guy on the scene.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that's interesting enough, too, because it's so, Todd, it is so different than that narrative. That's why, you know, I've said during that whole process in December, y'all, let's just wait. Let's hear more on this. And I was one that was pushing the state to get with it and get more information out. But this is very important because this isn't just 2 or 3 degrees separated. This is like 180 degrees from the narrative that had E.J. Bradford running and with a crowd, and he didn't have a gun, or if he did, it was holstered and all that. This is very contrary.
It is, and you make a great point, is that when things like this happen, it's best to wait and find out what's going on. Now, when I do my reporting, I try to tell both sides, and mm-hmm. I've certainly allowed the family to have plenty written, and also from law enforcement. But I've talked to some law enforcement in the recent weeks, people who read every day and have kept up with this, and they haven't, you know, said anything on the record necessarily, but they've made certain comments that have led me to believe that, hey, there's a little more to this story that is being reported, because it can't be reported yet. It's not like anybody's wrong or is falsely reporting stuff. I just got the indication that, hey, there's more than meets the eye here, and that's what we're starting to see come out. When actual evidence is being entered in here, that, you know, a different story starts to be told. And that's important. And remember, this is just a preliminary trial. This is not the hearing. This is not the trial. If this goes to trial, all this stuff is going to come out, and that we'll know a whole lot more then.
Have you heard anything more from Benjamin Crump or attorneys for the family on this?
Not today. And, you know, usually after stories like this, they'll have some kind of news conference or have some kind of statement, but they haven't, so far as I know, today. So we'll see.
This is a really interesting twist. I'm going to be following your reporting on this. And also, let's shift gears here, because how can you not, and look at Washington. It's another day, and it's another series of stories from the Capitol. Today, I mean, whether we can talk about Pelosi and the plane pulled out from under her, or number one on the list, what, first of all, your feelings as a journalist that BuzzFeed is breaking news. If this is true, the Cohen bombshell, as it's called, and I have my questions about that, about wait and see, and let's get more information. But if it is, what about BuzzFeed now getting the scoop?
You know, that's interesting, because when I first got up to D.C. about 6 years ago, BuzzFeed was pretty new on the scene, and they were basically just a pretty light news department, yep. And more about, you know, kind of funny gifts and stuff like that. But I got to say, I got to know a couple of reporters at BuzzFeed, and they were very respected in the halls of Congress. Some of them went on to better jobs with the Washington Post or CNN or whatever. But, you know, they're a reasonably good news department. I mean, they have the resources to do deep dives. They've been on this Trump Tower story out of Moscow for some time. And so, look, I'm not saying you should believe it or shouldn't believe it. Matter of fact, in my email today, I qualified a lot of it with, look, if this checks out, if it is true. But what they're reporting, and this is from testimony, and this is from sources, law enforcement sources. It sounds like they've got a source within the special counsel's office itself. They are reporting that Cohen, Michael Cohen, the president's lawyer, the guy who was his fixer for years, was asked by the president to lie to Congress. Now, remember, Cohen has pleaded guilty that he's lied to Congress. That's
right.
That's done.
Yes.
So what he told Congress, he said, was not true. He told Congress that the president stopped being involved in the Trump Tower Moscow deal before January 2016, had no campaign involvement or anything like that. He's now said that was not correct.
I turn around and argue? I know it's simplistic, it's cliche, but I'll just do it anyway. That now he's proven to be a liar, so why do I believe him this time?
Absolutely, and that's what the president's attorneys are saying. Giuliani's saying that, like, hey, you're basically trying to take the word of a liar. That's another good point, though, Sean. You know, it's he said, she said until you've got some evidence, until you've got something to corroborate what you're doing. And so that's why, you know, what I wrote today was, you know, if this is true, if what BuzzFeed has reported ends up checking out and there's more evidence to back it up and there's corroboration, it's a real problem for the president. If you ask someone to perjure themselves, that's a crime, pretty serious crime.
Absolutely.
So what he needs is for them to have blown it completely. He needs for Cohen to absolutely check out to be a liar and to maybe be trying to do something to save his own skin here. Who knows? But we don't know. That's the thing, is we don't know. What I can't stand about the news cycle these days is that people want to believe or not to believe certain news based on what you right. wish was true.
Right.
And look, I don't want the president to be in trouble. I don't wish for this to be true. I don't wish for it not to be true. But I do care about the truth. And I think it's important for the special counsel to begin to, you know, conclude his investigation. Let's get the facts out there. Let's see what he has. Because it's not good for anybody for all these accusations to be standing out there against a president who's trying to do the job.
Yeah, it seems like that's part of it, is just this, whether something sticks or not. You know, how many bombshells have we had over time that those are yesterday's news and you don't even think about them anymore, things that are rolled out as a bombshell. Also, you mentioned, and that exactly what I said this morning, I said this is going to depend on, because it's he said right now, and we need corroborating evidence. But I don't know what that looks like, because you have the word of, oh, no, it was way early in 2016. No, it was way late in 2016. How do you, other than an email or a recorded video chat or something, how do you corroborate who's right?
Well, I think those would be interesting meeting notes. I mean, if you go and read the BuzzFeed story, they at least they seem to think that there is more to just Cohen being the only one. But look, you'd have to get folks under oath. You have to get folks to maybe including some within the Trump organization under oath to say, hey, is this true or not? But BuzzFeed reports that there are internal company emails, text messages, and other documents that back up what Cohen is saying. The question is, okay, BuzzFeed says it is there. Mm-hmm. Do federal prosecutors have those documents? You know, when you had the raid of Cohen's apartment and the raid of his office, were those emails part of that? You know, and so if so, that would be troublesome.
Yeah, but another thing, my partner here, Dalton, said this morning, and a great comparison, he said, okay, so BuzzFeed's saying, in so many words like you did, that they have somebody inside the investigation that's getting this information. But it was just, what, days ago, if not maybe a week, Jonathan Carl, ABC, says, you know what, this is going to be anticlimactic, I think, to quote him on the Mueller report, because he's got sources inside the Mueller probe that say there's not much there. I mean, so as a regular American, I'm left scratching my head going, what is it?
Hey, man, me too. My head's kind of spinning on this. And I've thought for the last several weeks, maybe, you know, going back to November or so, that if there was really something there, if Mueller really had something, then we'd know it by now. And we haven't. So I'm right there with you. And I saw that Jonathan Carl story. I've been thinking all along, okay, well, you know, he's gotten plenty of fish, right? He's gotten plenty of convictions and guilty pleas and things like that, so he can be proud of an investigation that exposed, you know, some bad guys. But, you know, if he had something on the president or anybody close to the president, we would know it by now. So I've been a big skeptic, so we'll see. We just don't know. We don't know until he shows his cards. And I think more and more Americans are getting to the point where, look, let's see it. We'll see what you got. And but that said, he's going to have to be very careful how he rolls this out, whatever's in there. You know, because again, you've got two sides to every debate in this, and if he has something, he better prove it, book, chapter, and verse.
That is for sure. All right. Of course, we'll be catching more reporting on this through Alabama Daily News. Remind folks, if they want to get that email in the inbox, what do they need to do right now?
Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Click subscribe right there at the top. Enter your name and email. It's free. You'll be on the list and get an email from me every morning going down the day's news. So we don't do Saturdays, so don't expect it tomorrow. But on Sunday, we'll have a digest and all throughout the week. And you're going to want to pay attention as the legislative session gets underway.
Guaranteed. We got lots more to talk about. Todd, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Sean.
Coming right back. More of Midday Mobile right here on FM Talk.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, we'll get into it in a second. That does remind me of the have a conversation about Rosenstein. Remember that? We'll get right back to it. Heads up here. It was a great night last night out at Cottage Hill Package, but like, that's just in the rear view. They're already looking at what's next. And the folks from New Belgium Brewing have a free tasting coming on the 24th. That is a Thursday from 6 to 8 at Cottage Hill Package. These events we've been telling you about, they have these great craft breweries in. They also have cigar events. They have fine wines. You can come out and sample. And if it's like the world, you know, the world of craft beer, which I have a craft beer story to say, but in the world of craft beer, they're always doing something new. We just talked about what Fairhope Brewing Company has going on tomorrow for their big 6th birthday party. They have the ability to brew lots of different kind of specialty beers and new beers. They're always doing and innovating. Well, it makes it tough if you're somebody that like has a couple of those on a weekend or something like that to know what's new and what's good, because you're not going to buy a 6-pack of something until you kind of know what it's like. Okay, that's why these are great. Go to Cottage Hill Package. You sit down, you get little sample cups, and you get to taste the new beers they have. And then you'll find one that you're like, yeah, that's not for me, or, oh, I love that one. That's my new favorite. And then you can pick up a 6-pack. So it gives you a chance to sample. It's a test drive of that craft beer. And it's a free event. They do it usually on Thursdays at Cottage Hill Package from 6 to 8. But yeah, this week it's going to be a lot of fun. New Belgium Brewing Company, pretty big one here. They're going to be bringing Ranger Paul. That's the name of the person from New Belgium. Ranger Paul is coming in. He's going to be pouring new offerings from New Belgium, including their Up Next Series 1 Brute IPA, their Voodoo Ranger Liquid Paradise IPA, their Voodoo Ranger Juicy Hazy IPA, and some other surprises. And what's cool as well, if you're a fan of a particular brewery, quite often they got stickers or hats or swag, cool stuff you can get. You know, if you've got that beer refrigerator where you put the stickers on it, that kind of stuff, pretty good place to get them when you go to these events at Cottage Hill Package. You can keep up with all that when you like them on Facebook, Cottage Hill Package. Go to the website, cottagehillpackage.com, or tastier yet, go see them in person, the corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest. It's Thursday, 24th, for New Belgium Brewing. That's at 6. All right, I mentioned the Rosenstein thing just because, do you remember, and Dalton remember this day, it was like maybe it was 2 months ago or whatever. It was a given day that maybe it was a day and a half of these news cycles that the President Trump is going to fire Rosenstein. And then it was, no, Rosenstein's going to quit. Now he's going to fire. And then they, both of the stories, if you remember, said sources in the White House, or sources close to the issue, or something like that. They were both quoting inside sources, in other words, leaks. And the story was absolutely contrary. They were, in that case, 180 degrees apart. What one set of leaks, air quotes here, was saying the president was about to fire Rosenstein. The other side was saying Rosenstein's going to quit. What happened? Neither happened. So that's why I point out all this. Cohen, I don't know. I mean, and I like what Todd said. There's, you know, you got to look for truth. You could have your political opinions, but you got to look for truth. So if you look at this story right now, if you are fair from either side, I don't think we've seen enough here that what they're calling the bombshell story about President Trump should be anything other than a thing you put in your let's check back on file. I don't think that's worth doing. But right now, you got Michael Cohen saying, oh, this is what happened after, you know, he's lied to Congress. But you have the president saying it didn't happen that way. Well, you have White House officials saying that's not what happened. Well, unless somebody comes up with a court, it's he said, unless there's some kind of email or signed document or something showing, you know, okay, they said go work on the Moscow deal and the date was this. Unless that exists, I don't know how it's a bombshell. If it does exist, then they probably need to bring it out, right? Before this story, like so many other bombshells they brought against President Trump, have now just gone into the ash heap. All right. Oh, I mentioned the craft beer thing because I want to give a heads up on how the government shutdown is affecting people. And this story came out from our news partners at WKRG earlier in the week, and I'm just going to do it off the top of my head. But because I was reading the story this morning, national story, it said something to the effect of, it was talking about the longest government shutdown in history and the number of federal workers that were working without pay, and now maybe another 50,000 are going to be called back into work but without pay. And it said in the story, it said it was having negative impacts on the U.S. economy. And they said, oh, it's affecting places like Colorado where craft breweries are awaiting government approval on beer. Well, we know from the story from WKRG here locally, specifically what happened to Serta's. It's pretty interesting on a couple fronts. Number one, how the shutdown affects local business. But number two, that there's a government agency in charge of approving not what's in the beer. I get that. You got to make sure you know what the alcohol content is. You got to list the things on it so if somebody who's allergic to something doesn't get sick. That's all valid. No, they had that part done. They had not gotten approval from the government agency that approves the label. Now, I'm not joking. The government agency that has to approve your beer label. And now this is, a beer they had, but in this case, they had to get a label for it. And they couldn't get it. Couldn't get it approved. The government agency to approve your label. I mean, is that a necessary part? As we talk about necessary parts of government, is that a necessary part of government to have an agency to approve the label for your beer? Not what's in it. Don't come at me with a FDA argument. That's valid. I'll agree with you. What's on your label? And therefore, they can't release the beer because they got to wait for approval on the label. There you go. Not making this stuff up. It's just one of those things that I hadn't been aware of until we shut the government down, at least some portions of the government. All right, 1258 FM Talk 106.5, back hour number two of Midday Mobile on the way. Dalton's going to join us for 6.5 stories. He said we have it's triple Florida Man story set coming up. So if you, like me, are a big fan of Florida Man stories, Dalton's going to pay that off coming up in just a little bit. Y'all stay close.